The Guardian.
Hello and welcome to The Guardian Football Weekly. An international break so soon, and for what? Just to qualify for another tournament which will end in heartbreak. Rashford had sat Donnarumma down. He'd done the hard work. Anyway, no point looking back. What about now? England are good. A potentially tricky Hungary dispatched with relative ease as the headlines predictably, depressingly happen off the pitch. Monkey chants, booing the knee, hurling the nearest thing they can find at the England players. What else can we say apart from to call again on football's authorities to take it seriously? And all the while remembering, as Gareth Southgate points out, that racism and antisocial behaviour are very much alive and well here. Also today, robbery in the Algarve. Just one of the headlines from the Irish newspapers. A record for Ronaldo after the boys in green had stood strong for so long. We'll get a despondent Scott on, we'll round up all the internationals, look ahead to the WSL, answer your questions, and that's today's Guardian Football Weekly. On the panel today, Barry Glendenning, hello.
Hi Max, how are you?
I am very well, thanks for asking. Jonathan Wilson, hello.
Morning, how you doing?
I'm all right, and a pod debut for Anita Abayomi from the Goal Diggers podcast. Welcome, Anita.
Thanks, hello, how are you?
Yeah, very good. Thanks for coming. It's very kind of you to be here. Should we start? We'll start with Hungary, England. We'll start on the pitch, I guess. England remained top of qualifying Group I, 5 points clear of Poland and Hungary. And Wilson, England are good at football, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. I thought it was a really good performance. There was a bit of frustration, I think, at halftime from various people on social media and even pundits in the studio about how England were playing. But I sort of thought, well, you know, it's Hungary. We know they're quite good. They'd only lost one in the previous 14. We'd seen them hold France, very, very nearly beat Germany. And a draw in that game was a perfectly good result for England. And then the second half, England's passing was a little bit slicker. They took a few more risks going forward. And as soon as they'd scored, Hungary collapsed. And actually, the temptation is saying they were ruthless. But the truth is, Harry Kane probably should have scored, or could easily have scored, three more. So it turned into a very comprehensive win. But I actually think the more impressive thing is how they dealt with a hostile stadium, looked totally confident in possession, incredibly in control, and then when the chances came, they took them. So yeah, I thought it was a very impressive performance.
We're going to win the World Cup, aren't we? I can just
I mean, good as Hungary are, they are not the teams you have to beat. You do have to beat them to win the World Cup, but there will be better teams.
No, that is true. Who stood out for you, Anita?
Funny enough, probably Jack Grealish. I felt like he ran the whole show. Like, from the first half, right, I thought, okay, the passing is nice, but where's the end product? Like, the passing was a bit too slow, decision-making was a bit too slow, but Jack Grealish, he was on point for the full 90. So Jack Grealish definitely stood out to me. I'm going to say Mason Mount. A bit of bias here because, you know, I'm a Chelsea fan and I absolutely adore him. So Mason Mount as well, definitely my two standouts. And just like you said, like, Harry Kane should have at least got four on the score sheet. And it was kind of disappointing to see. Maybe he's just a bit rusty, actually. I'm not going to give him that much of a hard time. Maybe he's a bit rusty. But when I say Jack Grealish ran the show, yeah, that's my boy. Jack Grealish stood out for me.
Actually, Anita, I'd written, do we underestimate Mason Mount? Because, I mean, obviously he's rated. But I sometimes think almost already starting to take him for granted as a footballer.
Do you know what? I like you, Max. I really do like you.
I'm just trying to be kind. It's early. It'll get ruder later.
Honestly, yeah. No. I hope you keep the same energy throughout the day because I'm telling you, Mason Mount, he is so underrated, undervalued, underrespected. It's unbelievable what he brings to a team. It's more than just the skill set. It's more than just the creativity. It's more than just the passing. It's the energy. He brings the energy to the team for a full 90 minutes. And you can barely find that, especially in attacking forward. So Mason Mount, underrated, and he needs to be highly valued, especially from not just England fans, but Chelsea fans as well. We need to give him the respect that he deserves, man.
And actually, in many ways, Barry, you bring the energy for the pod. In many ways, you're the Mason Mount of Football Weekly.
And I am also underappreciated and underrated. I am the beating heart of this podcast. We all know it. When I'm not here, it's nowhere near as good. You'll find that out in the next 2 weeks when I'm on holidays.
The gauntlet is laid down. Yes, Wilson?
Well, I think the thing with Mount, I was talking to somebody about this the other day, that football now is very complicated. Yeah, the in terms of the press, in terms of depth analysis, in terms of players having to learn their positions. And there's obviously huge variation between players in how much of that information they can take on board. So some players, you just have to say, okay, when that centre-back gets the ball, you stand between him and the full-back. And that's pretty much for some of the instructions they can take on board. What every coach you talk to who's worked with Mason Mount says, and this is why coaches love him, is he picks up incredibly complex ideas incredibly quickly. And he then can organise on the pitch as well. So I think that's why you've seen pretty much every coach, no, not just pretty much, every coach he's worked with absolutely loves him, because they tell him something once, they show him a diagram once, and it's in his head and he gets it. So that I think is a value that is incredibly difficult for outsiders to appreciate, because we don't quite know what they're trying to do. If you're watching on telly, you can't possibly pick it up because you don't see the whole pitch. But that's what all coaches who've worked with him talk about, is his game intelligence is on a level way, way beyond most players.
And is that more off the ball than on the ball?
Well, it's both.
I mean, without the ball, I mean, defensively.
It's both. It's just an understanding of the shape of the game and the dynamics of the game. He's capable of absorbing a lot of information and processing it in a very efficient way.
Barry, everyone's favourite double pivot, Calvin Phillips, did a nice tweet hugging Declan Rice. There's something sort of lovable about these two, and I know you're sad that you lost Declan Rice to England, but they are brilliant together.
Yeah, they really are. They complement each other very well. I thought Grealish was a standout player yesterday, but I think Sterling and Declan Rice also deserved immense credit. Hungary didn't offer a huge amount in the way of attacking prowess, but they dealt with everything that was thrown at them with absolute ease. And I really loved the manner in which Declan Rice just shoved it up to the Hungarian fans by more or less mocking them as the abuse rained down and the paper cups rained down from the stand.
Yeah, well, let's get on to that then. Joe says, how effing inevitable and depressing is it that there was racial abuse during and after the game? Is there a solution? I'm increasingly excited about England's football while simultaneously increasingly anxious about racist abuse at away games and or after bad performances here. There were monkey chants from the fans in the Puskas Arena directed towards Raheem Sterling and Jude Bellingham, according to ITV's Gabriel Clark. The BBC journalists confirmed that they heard monkey chants too. Fans booed England taking the knee. Players were pelted with plastic cups. As you mentioned, Baz, Declan Rice, one of a couple of players who picked up the glass and sort of drank from it. A firework was thrown on the pitch. Gareth Southgate was pelted with ice after the game by sort of fans surrounding there, you know, when he was being interviewed. And Hungary have been given a two-game stadium ban by UEFA for racist and homophobic behaviour at Euro 2020. They will serve that in the Nations League because this is a FIFA competition. They weren't banned from this. And that, Wilson, to me, seems ridiculous that UEFA and FIFA can't come together.
Yeah, absolutely. There should be some sort of overall disciplinary board which deals with that kind of thing. I mean, generally, I'm opposed to stadium bans. I don't like collective punishments. I think the case of Hungary is slightly different. The reason why I dislike collective punishment is I think it creates false incentives. So if you as a football federation know that the punishment for some of your fans racially abusing or homophobically abusing or whatever, opposing players, is your stadium gets closed and you lose money, then it is in your interest to play that down. Whereas what you actually want is the federation to say, yeah, it happened, it's appalling, and these are the steps we're taking to eradicate that. But in the case of Hungary, we know exactly who it is. It's all those people in black T-shirts. They're the Carpathian Brigade. They're well known. They've been doing it for years. And you know, it's not even just a football issue with them. They go on marches. And the fact that they still have such prominence in the stadium, there's no attempt to disguise who they are, suggests to me either a blindness on the part of Hungarian FA or an unwillingness to tackle it or an inability to tackle it. And when that happens, I think you do have to close stadiums.
And Anita, one of the most frustrating things was seeing the Hungary players go and stand and applaud the Carpathian Brigade for 5 minutes after the game. They'd sort of talked a good game in the build-up to this match and afterwards, for whatever reason, decided that was the right thing to do.
I thought that was ridiculous, you know, like I was actually laughing. Like I know like it's not a funny situation and all, but I was laughing. I was just like, this is kind of pathetic, ain't it? Because your fans have spent a good half of the 90 minutes racially abusing our players. And fair enough, you get beaten 4-0. Like after any match, when you get beaten 4-0, you would go to the fans and you would applaud them and, you know, just acknowledge them a little bit. But after their behaviour, it's kind of condoning their behaviour, saying, OK, what we did on the pitch was far worse than what you did in the stands. And I guess, again, it's where FIFA comes in. It's where they say, OK, they should have looked at the situation with UEFA and said, OK, so they got a 2-match ban. Why did they get a 2-match ban? Let's kind of come together and kind of force a stadium ban for them as well. But it didn't happen. They didn't come together. The players, they're condoning it by going to the stands and giving them a round of applause. So, yeah, they basically said, well done for the racist abuse. It wasn't enough. So here's a round of applause. Like that was absolutely ridiculous for me. But hey, I'm really happy with the way the boys, they stood together. They came strong, especially when Raheem Sterling scored. I thought that was a bit comical, and I enjoyed every second of that. So well done to the boys for that.
Gareth Southgate said, it's never acceptable. We also have to look at ourselves. We have to get our own house in order. I don't think our players can do anything more in terms of getting messaging out. It's up to other people now. It's not fair to point the finger at all Hungarian fans. It's similar to what we have at home. The FA said, we'll be asking FIFA to investigate the matter. It's extremely disappointing to hear reports of discriminatory action towards some of our England players. I just feel, Barry, we've been here before, and we'll say the same things again, and we'll say the authorities need to clamp down on it more, and then they won't. And then we'll repeat this conversation in 2 months, 6 months, a year, 2 years, whatever.
Yeah, probably. One presumes that Hungary will now be punished by FIFA like they were by UEFA, and will get a financial slap in the wrist and possibly a stadium ban or a part stadium ban. And yeah, we will end up having this conversation again. But I think what Gareth Southgate says about England getting their own house in order is important, because England also have a quite conspicuous section of anti-social support. And listening, while they were entirely right to criticise what happened in the stands in Budapest yesterday, it did leave a little sour taste in my mouth to hear some of the sanctimonious pearl clutching from various British broadcasters on TV and radio, you know, who seem to have forgotten just how poorly behaved England fans can be on their day.
Yeah, I mean, I wonder actually, and because we did the final, and then we didn't really talk about what happened on that day of the final, you know, should England have I know it's a slightly different situation, you know, it wasn't racism, it was just sort of chaos, but you wonder if England should have a stadium ban for what happened before.
Oh, I think they absolutely should. Yes, and I presume there was some sort of investigation underway. If there isn't, and they don't get punished for that, it would be pretty disgraceful, I think. But I can't stress enough, this is not to say what happened in Budapest should not be criticised. You can criticise one thing without criticising everything else.
Sure. And what about a points ban, Anita? I don't know. I'm sort of speculating at things that might make a difference.
Yeah, a points ban. I don't know.
I mean, a points deduction, really. Yeah.
A points deduction. Yeah. Do you know what? Right. I'm just so tired of it. Like, I'm really tired of talking about what we can and what we can't do in retaliation to this kind of abuse and stuff. And I'm just thinking, listen, I'm tired of giving answers for what we should do about it, because at the end of the day, if UEFA, if the FA, if FIFA are not doing anything substantial about it, who am I to now say, okay, let's give, what about a points deduction, you know? Like, I just feel like racism shouldn't be tolerated, full stop. Like, it should be a universal thing amongst football fans, and even amongst everyone who, you know, sits on these boards, sits on the FA, sits on FIFA, sits on UEFA, and they should just find something that's so detrimental to two different FAs and just say, okay, racist abuse happened in your stadium, we're going to give your fans a stadium ban. it has to be something that's kind of across the board, as opposed to just giving them a points deduction, because a points deduction is not really going to do much. It'll infuriate fans for a bit, yeah, and maybe, you know, the players will start to care a little bit more, but otherwise it's still going to happen. Like, there needs to be something a bit more stricter. If it's stadium bans, then it's stadium bans. If it's points deductions, it's point deductions. But at the end of the day, I'm so sick and tired of giving the FA, giving FIFA and UEFA the answers for all of this, because they should know the answers themselves. And if they did take racism seriously enough, then there would be a substantial punishment for it. But at the moment, there's not. Every single game that racism happens is something different. The punishment is different, you know. Like, I look back to when England, I think we played Bulgaria a couple of years ago, and the racism there was absolutely insane. And then they stopped the match, and then they stopped it again. And then it's just like, you're giving people chances to redeem themselves after racism. I'm frustrated. They need to actually get on their asses. Am I allowed to say asses?
I mean, you probably want them to get off their asses.
Yeah, get off their asses. They need to get off their asses and do something. Stand up to it. Do something. Like, I'm so tired of giving them the answers. Do something about it. Like, come on. I'm not getting paid to give you guys answers. You lot are getting paid millions. Provide the answers. It's right there in front of you. Frustrating.
I think you are getting paid. I wouldn't say a huge amount to give me answers on this podcast, but we won't get Wilson on that one. Just before we leave it, worth saying that FIFA said, first and foremost, FIFA strongly rejects any form of racism and violence and has a very clear zero tolerance stance for such behaviour in football. FIFA will take adequate actions as soon as it receives match reports concerning yesterday's Hungary-England game. At the time of recording, there's no statement from the Hungarian FA. Back to the football. Andorra on Sunday. Wilson, presumably Gareth Southgate changes the whole team.
Yeah, probably. With another game, with the Poland game coming up, I think it would be strange not to rest players. I don't know if there's anybody in that side who feels they would need minutes or want minutes, but I would assume it would be wholesale changes for that game. And again, you know, if it sort of doesn't really matter what happens in that game as long as England do win it.
Yeah, and very excited to see grade 7 violin Patrick Bamford score a hat-trick.
And the thing is, that Poland game, if England can avoid defeat there, they're pretty much home and dry, which after would be, what, six games would be... it'd take a lot of pressure off the rest of the campaign.
My only other notes were I'd really love this kit. I think it's a beautiful kit. I love the collar. I love everything about this kit.
It's a lovely kit. It's just not an England kit, is it? It's like sort of an Oldham kit from about 1990.
Well, that's probably why I like it, because that is my wheelhouse. I mean, that is Rick Holden and Roger Palmer. I mean, that is absolutely when football was at its absolute best. And I'd completely forgotten that Hungary's manager was Mike Ehrmantraut from Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul. So it was lovely to see him. And, you know, he's had some long days, has Mike. Well, that'll do for part one. Part two, we'll begin with the heroic Irish in Portugal. Welcome to part two of the Guardian Football Weekly. Next week, without Barry, one of those terrible pods, one of those pods you don't need to listen to, we're doing a mailbag. Me, Philippe, Lars and Jordan. You happy with that lineup, Barry?
I won't be listening.
Okay. If you have any questions...
Why is it that now you've gone to Australia, you just can't be asked with a script? You're just getting other people to write the script?
It's a good question.
It's not like you've anything better to do at the moment. Stuck in Lazarus.
We're doing a particularly difficult puzzle of Tower Bridge. The first mailbag pod was, yes, it was just because I didn't have time to do anything and I had a flight to catch. Apparently it was really, people really liked it. So we're doing another one.
With an entirely different cast.
With a different entirely, yeah, of course. To show the...
So you think it's the format, not the people?
we'll see how it goes, and we can do a poll. Which one did you prefer, the one with Wilson and Barry or the one with Lars, Philippe and Jordan? Anyway, if you have a question for those three wonderful people and it's longer than a tweet, you can email footballweekly@theguardian.com. Anything you like, existential, serious, silly, whatever, and you know Aston Villa for Jordan, FIFA Philippe, Nordic for Lars. You know, that's a podcast, isn't it? Right, Portugal 2, Republic of Ireland 1. Podrick says, should the president of the Ronaldo fan club be refereeing international matches he's playing in? AJ says, where does Matej Zug, who was the ref, rank amongst Gaizka Mendieta, Toto Schillaci and Thierry Henry as the mortal enemy of Irish football? Ian says, does Barry need a hug after that Portugal match? Because I certainly do. Barry.
Yeah, Matej Zug has certainly entered the pantheon of Irish sporting villains, a quite unlikely entrant, I'd say, because a Slovenian few, if any of us had ever heard of before Wednesday night. Look, I don't like complaining about referees, but he has generated fury at home. Absolute fury. He did make some questionable decisions. I originally thought the penalty that Portugal got was nailed on, but replay suggested it was far from cut and dry. But having consulted his monitor and his video assistant referee for, I think, nearly 6 minutes, good old Matej Zug decided to give the penalty. Ireland possibly could have had a penalty in the second half, which, if converted, would have put them 2-0 up. But I don't think it's reasonable to dwell on the refereeing performance. Ireland had the match in the bag. They certainly had the draw in the bag, and they kind of threw it away, letting Ronaldo, and I know how good he is at finding space, but they let him gave him two free headers in the space of 6 minutes. It was a heroic rearguard defence by Ireland, but I think some of my compatriots might be reading too much into the performance. We went into that game having lost our most recent match against Luxembourg at home, which is just downright embarrassing. And to go so close here, I suppose, has given people a lot of hope. It was a very good performance. It suggested the players are finally on the same wavelength as their manager, Stephen Kenny. But I think some are overlooking the number of really good chances that were missed by Portugal. But it was a very, very sad outcome. I really thought we were going to win it. Then I thought, points not so bad. And good old Cristiano popped up late doors in the sixth of 5 minutes of added time to score the winner. Not that I'm bitter. What is interesting about that game, actually, it was another match, and this is something for Manchester United fans to, I wonder if some of them who aren't blinded by celebrity might have noticed, it was another game in which Cristiano Ronaldo and Bruno Fernandes, it looked like they can't play together in the same team, and that would be a worry for me as a Manchester United fan. Bruno Fernandes was awful and was hooked after just shortly after the hour mark.
I mean, the other point is Ronaldo should have been sent off, right?
I don't agree with this. Sorry, I've completely forgotten about that. No, I don't think Ronaldo should have been sent off.
He slaps O'Shea in the face. I mean, it doesn't matter that he barely makes contact. He slaps him in the face. It's a red card. I mean, it's...
Well, I don't...
The law says it is an offence to strike or attempt to strike. If you swing an arm in somebody's face, that is an attempt to strike. I mean, O'Shea then sort of collapses preposterously, and you can argue he should have got a yellow for kicking the ball away, then another yellow for his reaction. But I don't see how you can interpret swinging an arm like that as anything other than a red card.
Are you suggesting, Wilson, that Portugal v Ireland, when they're 10 man each and Ireland have lost O'Shea and Portugal have lost Ronaldo, helps Ireland's cause more than Portugal?
Yeah, I mean, you get this in chess, don't you? You get like queen sacrifices. I think that's
exactly
very much the same thing.
Well, sorry.
Carry on, Beth.
Weirdly have to disagree with Jonathan there, because I don't think Ronaldo should have been sent off. Well, for anyone who doesn't know, what happened is he placed the ball on the spot, ready to take the penalty. The referee was away to one side doing some administrative work, booking Jeff Hendrick for the foul, which had cost Ireland the penalty. And Dar O'Shea just sort of kicked the ball off the spot shortly after Ronaldo had placed it there. Ronaldo did raise his hand. He didn't hit O'Shea in the face. He caught him somewhere in the upper arm. O'Shea turned away, had a look around to see if there was an official anywhere, and then grabbed his face. He didn't throw himself preposterously to the ground. He did lean over and pretend he had been hit in the face. But I think a yellow card for both of them would have sufficed if the video assistant referee had bothered to draw to the referee's attention. And it seems
it's
like he doesn't.
It's a swinging arm. It's not a push. It's a swinging arm. I think he's very lucky to get away with that.
Are you saying, Barry, dead arm? A dead arm, like I used to get at Scouts, that should be a yellow and above the shoulder.
But it wasn't even a punch. It was a cuff.
A cuff.
Yeah, I would love to have seen him sent off. I would absolutely love to have seen him sent off. But hats off to Gavin Bazunu for saving his penalty. He was one of several young Irish players who really played with a huge amount of distinction, and that's bodes well for the future. But I think the jig is up for Ireland as far as qualifying for the World Cup is concerned. It will be interesting to see how they play in their next two games against Azerbaijan and Serbia. Will they build on that performance, or will they go back to type and just serve up more dross?
We should mention Ronaldo is now the leading international men's goal scorer of all time. 111 goals, as Richard Jolly tweeting. He's now scored as many international goals as Pele and Maradona got between them, which is, on balance, quite an incredible achievement. And he'll wear the number 7 jersey for Manchester United. I wasn't sure if it would be possible to have the number 7 shirt, so I'd like to say a huge thank you to Edison Cavani for this incredible gesture.
Wait, can you imagine being Cavani? Kind of, you've had to deal with all the Neymar nonsense at PSG. You get to Old Trafford and you think, at least it's kind of a fairly normal dressing room. Is, you can have my shirt, you can have my locker. Yeah, do you want my house? Like, yeah, whatever.
I was thinking about this, Anita. Like, my first reaction was complete cynicism. Just get a shirt, you know, just like when the kit bag arrives in Sunday League, you pick it up. There's always 2 number 8s anyway. And, you know, I used to wear the number 9. Now I just go for XL. That's what I'm looking for. I'm not bothered. I just want it to be a bit airy. But you know, numbers do, like, if you think about the sort of romance of a, you know, of Cruyff in 14 or Maradona in 10 or Messi in 10, like, they do matter. I don't love Ronaldo, and someone will yell at me for that. But even still, like, that 7 feels right for him.
Yeah, literally, it matters. Like, I don't think a United fan would have wanted to see Ronaldo come in with, like, a number 20, 28 or something like that. And they don't want to see that happen. So Ronaldo coming in, taking that number 7. Yeah, poor Edison Cavani, like, having to deal with another, you know, big-name superstar in the dressing room. But at the end of the day, if I've said this several times, if Ronaldo comes in and Ronaldo says, I want that number 7 shirt, you give him that number 7 shirt. It might as well be embedded in his contract that he gets a number 7 shirt everywhere he goes, you know? Like, honestly, I'm not surprised at all. I think the second they signed him, it was destiny. He was destined to get that number 7 shirt back. And it's really romantic, if I'm being honest with you. Like, I'm a sucker for, like, poetry and romance and, you know, remontadas and stuff like that. So him coming back, getting that number 7 shirt. Hopefully he doesn't score too many goals, but let's see if he's got that spirit of Ronaldo from Real Madrid and early Manchester United as well. Or he can bring his Juventus performance to Man United, and I wouldn't be too mad at that either.
I'm very much from the Angel de Maria, it's just a fucking number and it's just a shirt school. But considering how pivotal the number 7 is to Cristiano Ronaldo's brand, if I was Edison Cavani, I'd have let him have the shirt, but he'd have had to pay for it a lot.
15%? He'd have had a percentage?
I'd have said, give me £1 million, it's yours. Because I don't care what number I have in my back, but you want it. If you want it, pay for it.
On Ronaldo, the final bit is, Wilson, you've made it to TikTok.
Yes, that hasn't brought down deluge of abuse. That's good news.
Well, I couldn't see the comments because I'm not part of the TikTok generation.
Oh, no, just people reposting it on Twitter has drawn enough abuse.
So. Oh, I see. Anyway,
including people who don't seem able to understand that when I said, did he win the league in each of his seasons at Juve, I wasn't saying he never won the league. I was saying he didn't win in each of his seasons. So, yeah, what can you do with sort of, a BBC journalist not able to understand that? It's, yeah, the game's gone.
Are you dismissing
the country's gone?
Are you dismissing the TikTok generation? Anita, are you on TikTok?
Yeah, I'm on TikTok. I'm hiding my head in shame right now.
No, don't be.
For the benefit of the class, could you explain what has happened here? As a non-member of the TikTok generation, I don't know either.
The key thing to understand, Barry, is I was right, but people can't handle the truth. So, and they've responded with a deluge of abuse.
Wilson's excellent rant about Ronaldo and whether he'd be a good signing or not for Manchester United. Somebody clipped that and put it on TikTok, which as far as I can tell is, you know, you can just, it's like a minute. You can do a minute of whatever you want. And people generally do synchronized dances. In the old days,
I know
in
what
London,
TikTok is. I just.
Okay, I understand. All right, okay. That's, I'm right about that, Anita, aren't I? And then somebody put Wilson's thing on. Lots of people were angry, but I can't read the comments because I'm not on TikTok. Anita, do you feel like you stumbled into like an old pub of middle-aged men thinking, what the fuck am I doing here?
It actually just dawned on me when you said synchronized dancing. I was like, oh my God. Like, really? Synchronized dancing? That's what you get from TikTok.
Isn't that what TikTok is? I see people practicing these dances all around town.
I mean, that's like one section of it. But then you've got like, you know, the comedy size and people are doing like comedy skits and stuff like that. You can go on TikTok for like football skills and stuff, you know. Okay. The synchronized dancing is just what's kind of pushed out there because it's just nice to watch, really.
It's nice to watch.
You're really bad and it's funny. You know, it's hilarious.
I'm a sucker for, you know, ensemble, en masse dancing with perfect
just
synchronicity.
I will literally meet up with you in central London and we can do a TikTok right now. What do you say?
It might be logistics. Not tricky for Max.
It's not the reason I moved to Australia, but look. Can we do it in June? Is that all right? I'll be back in June.
We can do it in June.
I'll see you on the South Bank next to where the skateboarders are. I'm in. Let's get a despondent Scot on. Denmark 2, Scotland 0. One of our Scotland correspondents, Jim Burke, joined us. It is an international podcast and Jim is in a car park in Rochdale. presumably for some sort of work. I hope it's not one of those car parks, but whatever you want to do, Jim.
It's a bit early for that.
Yeah, I've got a meeting.
How are you, Jim?
I'm grand. I have a meeting and I'm not that despondent, in truth. Genuinely, I'm not.
Okay.
The second half managed to draw me back from the abyss.
Yeah, so look, you lost 2-0 to Denmark, two goals in 93 seconds. From what I saw of it, Jim, Steve Clarke got it wrong tactically in the first half and Andy Robertson was playing right wing back and then he worked it out.
That's exactly it. I mean, I thought he should have changed it earlier because it was obvious that was going wrong. Robertson on the right. I mean, I didn't even know why he didn't play, if he's going to do that, put Tierney right, because Tierney's played right in the past. So we kind of got everything wrong. The first goal was an absolute, like, back to the good old days of absolute shocking defending, because they'd already played two similar balls over the back. Tierney had already been caught twice. And then the third one, he was just getting his eye in. And then the second goal was one of them. It's a beautiful, beautiful bit of skill for Damsgaard. And at that point, I've got to admit, I was thinking, this could be 5 or 6. No, I would have been despondent in that result, trust me.
Okay. So, I mean, I suppose the thing for Scotland fans is, you know, you got to the tournament. It was like, it was great. You got there, you were part of it. And I suppose when you taste that, the thought of it not happening again, you know, for another however many years, I forget, it was a lot of years, wasn't it?
23.
Yes, and I don't know, do you have that sense, or do you sense, well, listen, tournaments are getting bigger. If you don't make Qatar, eventually the Euros will be 200 more countries than there are in Europe, and the World Cup will, you know, be so enormous that you will get there.
I think, Max, you kind of swung there between actual passive aggression and patronising, which you thought you'd done. I thought you'd done magnificently there, mate. I mean, it was a seamless. That's why you're a top level, you know, podcast host. The way you swung between those two stances.
I was trying to be friendly.
No, you weren't, Matt. We both had Max. Why am I calling you Matt?
I don't know. I've heard worse.
I don't know. I think qualification for us is always going to be difficult now because of the really bad years. We've always put ourselves now in where there's going to be at least two and three teams that are better than us. So it's always going to take something good for us to get out of there, to get out of a group. I mean, we're now in a situation where we've got Moldova on Saturday, which we should win. But the Austria game is now absolutely pivotal because, you know, we've had to come back to the two previous games against Israel and Austria. We've been behind and got the draw at the end. And that doesn't bode well, you know, because we really need, everybody's saying, oh, a draw in Austria will be fine. I don't think it is. With Scotland, we have got the ability to fuck it up at any time. And I think we need the 3 points in Austria. And I'm not truthfully very confident we'll get them.
Is there's still faith though in Steve Clarke and what he's doing, I presume?
Yeah, it is, because at the end of the day, there's no obvious candidate that you're thinking, oh, if we get X in, he will do much better. I mean, we've got some good players. There's absolutely signs that there's absolutely signs of improvement. A couple of mates of mine that are in the journal, I said that the players like him, you know, and the players listen to him, and you know, and as Scotland manager, we're not going to get, you know, he's probably as good as we're going to get, and I think he's a good manager. So, yeah, you see, now you've made me disappointed. I mean, as if sitting in a car park in Rochdale is bad. Oh, mate.
Oh, well, have a nice day, Jim.
Thank you very much. All right. Goodbye, everyone.
It's all right. Cheers, Jim. Cheers, Burke, mate. Live from Rochdale. Northern Ireland won 4-1 in Lithuania, their first win of the qualification campaign. Ian Barraclough's first competitive victory. First time in 14 years they've scored four away from home. Barry, any thoughts?
It was a very good win for them. They had a wobble for about 10 minutes. I think when they were 2-1 up, conceded a goal. An absolute belter, actually, from Barnaby Cass from outside the area. It was one of the goals of the midweek qualifiers. There was three penalties awarded in this game. Bailey Peacock Farrell saved one for Northern Ireland when they could have, if that had gone in, it would have been 2-2, and they were seriously wobbling at that stage. But then Shane Lavery and Paddy McNair scored to make it comfortable for them. Didn't know it was on a plastic pitch, which I was kind of surprised was allowed by FIFA, but there you go. And the referee was Stephanie Frappart from France, who, it surprised me to see a woman refereeing. Probably shouldn't, because she's very experienced and she's done high-profile games before. But it did sort of make me do a double take.
Worth saying, that goal scorer for Lithuania, Barry Vikas, is not called Barry Vikas. It's not a Lithuanian called Barry. It is, that's his surname, Rolandas Baravikas. I was convinced Stephen Davis had retired, so I was surprised to see him there. And their right back, Michael Smith, who won the penalty, took the shot that was handballed. He is greyer than me. Oh, it gave me so much hope that there's this sort of 50-year-old guy playing right back. He's at Hearts now. Elsewhere, Sweden beat Spain. Spain's first World Cup qualifying defeat since 1993. And Mr. Isak, scored a belter. Wales drew 0-0 with Finland in a friendly. France were held by Bosnia-Herzegovina, and Italy were held by Bulgaria. And that's sort of all my notes on these games, unless anyone has anything.
Norway won, Netherlands won. It's quite a good game. I sort of watched the first hour of that and switched over to the Ireland game. So, yeah, the Haaland-Van Dijk battle was the key of that. And so the Haaland scored, but it was a bit of a weird goal where the ball took about 18 ricochets and then Van Dijk smashed it into Haaland's leg and it just sort of spun in. So I don't know.
The first time I saw it, I thought it was a brilliant finish, from like a dinked finish. I'd never seen Haaland dink one. I always thought he just powered it, but actually his shin was in the way of Van Dijk's clearance. Basically.
So I don't know whether you give Haaland credit for sort of physically unsettling Van Dijk or whether you sort of think that was a bit lucky.
No, I don't. And that'll do for part two. And part three, we'll round up any other business. Welcome to part three of the Guardian Football Weekly. The Women's Super League starts on Friday. Today is Friday. I think it's Friday. Certainly Friday where I am. who knows, wherever you are and whenever you're listening, I'll get used to these things as time goes by. Manchester United play Reading. There's going to be much more coverage in the UK. 57 live games across Sky and the BBC minimum. 18 of the 22 on the BBC are going to be on BBC One or BBC Two. Four of the six games are going to be at the main stadiums of the home teams. Everton, Man City at Goodison, Spurs, Birmingham at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium, Arsenal, Chelsea at the Emirates, Brighton, West Ham at the Amex. Leicester, Birmingham, Reading will play the majority of their games at the men's stadium as well. Obviously, Chelsea, the team to beat under Emma Hayes. Susie Rack will be on the pod on Monday. We'll look back at that on the pod, obviously, that won't be worth listening to, Barry.
It's worth pointing out, actually, I meant to flag this up in the most recent pod, but Susie's article on the efforts to get the Afghanistan women's football team out of the Kabul was published this week after the last flight left, and it will become apparent when you read it, which you should, because it is an outstanding piece of work, why it was left until after the last flight had left Kabul for the article to be published.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And it's a brilliant piece. And some pieces elsewhere had been published before against the will of the people trying to get people out. And yeah, there are some absolute heroes in there, including Craig Foster, of course, your former neighbour, Barry, and my now co-host on Stan Sport, which I would recommend you subscribe if you're in Australia to watch the Champions League. I'm slightly nervous about talking to him about the homeless shelter I work at every Monday that don't like to talk about, since he's basically the greatest humanitarian of our time. And I wonder if he might look down on my pitiful charitable attempts.
Not least because you no longer work at the homeless shelter you don't like to talk about working at, because it's too far away. I'm sure as soon as you're released from quarantine, you'll find a new homeless shelter to show off your...
I will.
I mean, actually, pasta bakes.
Yes. When I leave, I will be homeless for a short amount of time myself. But then once I've found somewhere to live, then I will help others. Tarek Panja from the New York Times tweeting that FIFA's plan for a World Cup every 2 years is looking inevitable. The results of a feasibility study are not released, but support from football associations is pouring in. Africa, the first to fall in line. Looks like Asia is too. Wilson, you know, I'm a World Cup every 4 years person.
Yeah, I mean, there's a few things here. So the first is there's a lot of people I've spoken to about this who think this is a stalking horse to get UEFA to agree to an expanded Club World Cup. So the cycle would go World Cup, blank, Club World Cup, blank, World Cup.
When are the Euros then?
Well, that's a very good question, okay. Yeah. I mean, the Euros would be presumably in the same year as Club World Cup, but would clearly end up being downgraded. And not just the Euros. I think the Euros can... I mean, it's obviously not great for teams ranked between, say, 20 and 55 in, or 20 and 30 in Europe, who would expect to qualify, or would have a good chance of qualifying for Euros, but not much chance of qualifying for the World Cup, even in its expanded format. I think the bigger issue is Africa, which is why it's so odd that African votes seem to be carrying this. But that's to do with FIFA's takeover of CAF, which is an ongoing disgrace, which Philippe's done quite a lot about. Because the Cup of Nations, every 2 years, it generates interest, it generates revenue. And what we've seen over the last sort of 20 years is a real growth, that sort of mid-ranking African power. So the fact that Cap Verde can qualify and actually do really well in the tournament, teams like Guinea or Mali, Burkina Faso, who realistically have very little chance of getting to a World Cup. So are you just going to say they don't get tournament football, or are we going to have a significantly downgraded Cup of Nations for them? I'm talking to people next week, which I can't really say much about more about now, but that I think will make things a bit clearer. But it seems to me an appalling idea at this stage.
Craig says, can you just tell Wilson I love him and I want to be him?
Yeah.
I want Barry's lifestyle, though. It's what Craig wants.
Why?
Why do you look so disconcerted, Barry?
Well, I'm just wondering what he thinks my lifestyle is, and if he has an accurate view of it, why he would want it. Because it's pretty dull.
Maybe that's what
he
wants.
I'm also perplexed as to why he wants to be Wilson.
Yeah, to be sort of gripped by a series of neuroses that kind of can only be offset by occasionally scoring a 50.
I'm just reading what Craig wants. That's all I'm doing.
I think he probably should seek help.
That's how it starts. Says, in Guardian tradition, can you make a correction? In Monday's pod, Max referred to Rudiger digging up the penalty spot with a shovel. My old Irish dad told me you dig with a spade, not a shovel. So my apologies to everyone. A shovel would do the job, but it's not an area of expertise.
So a shovel is like moving coal or something, is it?
Or mixing cement.
Is that right? Okay.
You definitely have a coal shovel, don't you?
That is true, yeah. For doing the, when you're in a steam train, is that a shovel? That looks like a spade to me. I'm doing the actions, it's useful for listeners, isn't it?
I'm trying to figure out what the difference is. I'm just here like trying to imagine different things.
You're thinking, going, is this a football podcast and how, like, yeah. Why are people listening to this? Is what you're thinking.
How do we get to shovels and spades?
Well, if you're breaking ground, use a spade. If you were just moving, say, a pile of earth or cement from one place to another, use a shovel.
I would suggest, if you are Antonio Rudiger and you're trying to like do it subtly, a shovel is easier to sort of conceal, isn't it, than you know, a...
Maybe a trowel. You could probably fit a trowel down
the sock. I'm thinking more of a trowel. That's what I should have said, trowel.
And a trowel could double as a shin pad because it's conveniently shaped.
Maybe Antonio,
so you can go out with a trowel down each sock.
Yeah,
the ref will think you've got shin pads on. If anyone kicks you, they'll hurt their toe. And if the situation arises, you've got a handy tool there to scuff up the penalty. And if the ref asks you what you're doing, you just say, "Oh, I'm just planting some begonias,
some bulbs." It's not the season to be. It's all right now. I think now is sort of bulb planting time. I believe sort of just approaching winter, isn't it? So maybe it sort of works come April, May.
Well, not in your hemisphere.
Come April, May. That's a good point. Then that the I'm planting things won't work. It won't wash. John Moss will say that won't wash with me, Antonio. It's March. You can't be planting bulbs now. Can I finish on?
Oh, did you see last week? Sorry, at the test, at the Headingley test. Yeah. David Lloyd went to John Moss's record shop.
Oh, did he?
Yeah, he went to the Vinyl Whistle.
Wow.
And he bought a Rolling Stones album.
Oh, that's
awesome. I don't know the difference.
Let's finish with Richard Mills' tweet, who sent me a picture going, "You've only been gone 5 minutes, Max." It is, he found in a bargain bucket, the Soccer AM III DVD, The Greatest Team in the World, hosted by me and Helen Chamberlain. It has a sticker on it that says £2 each or 3 for £5. It then has a sticker over the top that says reduced was 25p. Now 5p. 5p. Like, just give the thing away. 5p. Nobody has cash anymore. You can't just put 5p on a card. You can't tappy tap with 5p. That's what's happened. 5p. I feel so broke.
It's still 5p more than we charge for this.
It's true, but I'd hate to charge 5p for this. It's like somebody said the plastic bag, the bag for life, would make it 3 times more expensive. It was a long time ago. Anyway, that'll do for today. Well, now it feels like we've chatted for enough. Anita, stunning debut. Well played. Thank you. Will you come again?
Yeah, I'd love to come again. You guys have actually made me laugh. Like, I'm actually tearing up. 5p. Sorry.
No, 5p. That's me. That's why I have to leave the country. That's why. Barry, have a wonderful holiday. What are you going to do? Craig wants to know. He wants your lifestyle.
Well, Craig will have to get on a plane and go to Ireland and visit my parents. And I'll be honest, he's welcome to do that if he wants to.
You can't send a proxy.
Carry on. Have you seen them since the revelations of the live shows?
No, I haven't. No.
Ah, that'll be good.
So, Craig, if you want to step into my shoes for a week, you're more than welcome to.
I will
pay all your expenses.
Just bear in mind, when you're stepping in those shoes, what is already in them?
I'll tell you afterwards, Anita. I love the idea of Craig arriving and your parents going, who are you? And you say, I'm here representing Barry.
Well, the thing is, I haven't been home for nearly, well over a year and a half. So they may have forgotten what I look like because we don't do Zoom calls. So Craig could just front up and just brazenly pretend to be me. He seems to know all about me. They might not notice that it's not me.
A sort of Martin Gare style situation.
And then I can go somewhere with a warmer climate for my holidays where I don't have to answer awkward questions about why I'm not married, why I'm overweight, and why I still smoke.
Three questions I'd like to know the answer to. Hey, well, we'll do those in 2 weeks. But that'll do for today. Thanks, everybody. We'll be back on Monday.
Just need to say bye to Wilson.
Oh, did I not say goodbye to Wilson?
No, it's fine. Fuck you. Fuck off.
No. Sorry. I prematurely ended the podcast without saying goodbye, Jonathan Wilson. Goodbye, Jonathan Wilson.
Goodbye, Max.
For more great podcasts from The Guardian, just go to theguardian.com/podcasts.